Welcome to Hair Metal Memories. We are your hosts. I'm Brian.
And I'm Aaron.
And we are on part two of our Van Halen retro that we're going through and covering the history of Van Halen and their influence on hair metal. We're settling in. We've got a bottle of Cabo Wabo tequila here because we've got some Sammy albums we're going to be talking about in a little
and
bit.
And this is arguably the best thing about the Sammy years is this drink in front of us. I'm sorry, everybody.
We'll get there. We'll get there. But for now, we're still in 1982. We were
all so young.
We're all so young. Diver Down, the Diver Down album. On this one, 5 of the 12 songs are infamously covers. So we got that going.
Kind of a weird thing in their history, you know?
I mean, yeah.
But, like, you know, I mean, they had said that they were hoping to have a little bit more time off before having to make another record.
Yeah. Yeah. They were getting ready to write, actually.
So that undoubtedly influenced the whole, like, okay, let's pull out some of the old tricks from our earlier days.
The label pressed them for a single, so they recorded Roy Orbison's Oh Pretty Woman, and it ended up being big. It was a hit single, and then the label pressured them for a record. And so they just threw down with what they had is basically what happened. They were getting ready to write, though. They wanted to do another album.
There are a lot of bands that have that third album struggle because they probably have a repertoire that is probably 2 albums worth of material by the time they get signed, you know.
And
so by the third album, it's like, oh, we're just about out of our songs that we thought were all of our best songs.
Yeah, and I don't even
know. Well, this is the 4th album.
I'd say these days, I don't think that would be the case. Most people are like, we've got 12 songs, let's record them. We've got an album, and then the next one comes around, you're like, shit.
You figure the theory with which they pounded out all them records.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, this is the 5th album, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. You know. And this one they recorded in 12 days, so... And they described it as being fun. So, I mean, I guess it's not too bad.
They had a good time.
Yeah. It's sold over 4 million copies. So, I mean, it did well. The video for Oh Pretty Woman was one of the first videos banned on MTV because it depicts 2 little people appearing to molest a woman.
And I can safely say I've never seen the video. I don't know.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that the woman in the video actually isn't a woman. I think it's somebody like cross-dressing or something like that. So it's a bunch of like, why did this get banned again?
Huh. Yeah, I have no idea. I've got nothing there. I never saw that one.
And
I missed
props
it.
To them for making something weird.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I sort of feel like this, like Diver Down, I feel like it's the anti-Fair Warning, where it sounds like the band's having fun again. And you can hear way more David Lee Roth on this record. I love Intruder. What a great intro to like a song.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's like a super heavy guitar.
I mean,
sound.
It's such a good intro that it's one of those things that a lot of classic rock radio, they just play both tracks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And especially when you get down to it, those 2 tracks together don't make a full 5 minutes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just long enough for the DJ to cue it up, run out and pee, get back.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I always heard them together, so I thought they were the same song growing up. And, like, you know, hearing them separately was sort of like, that's weird. They forgot the intro.
I didn't know they were different for a long time before I had this.
Yeah, I think Diver Down does probably get a little silly, but even in the silliness, there's, like, charm and talent and stuff. Like, Big Bad Bill feels, like, you know, out of place, sort of, but then also not really. I mean, if that makes sense. And Eddie and Alex's dad plays a clarinet solo on that, so that's kind of cool.
If I'm not mistaken, wasn't that David's idea to have him come play?
Yeah, I think once he found out that their dad played clarinet, he's like, well, we should totally get him for this, you know? What's your favorite song?
That's tough. Honestly, probably just Intruder by itself.
Intruder by itself.
That little 90 seconds, I just love it.
Okay.
I think it's great.
Solid pick.
I don't even know what my least favorite would be, but probably it's either Big Bad Bill or Happy Trails.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, you know, it's nothing against Happy Trails. It's fine and all, but it's like.
Right. Yeah. It's a little corny.
All right. Well, I guess both my picks are kind of odd like that, but that's just, I don't know. That's just how this album plays out for me. Because I do enjoy the whole record. I mean, I've, you know,
Yeah, it's a fun
listen. My whole David Lee Roth thing. But
my wife says that this is this one, and I think 1984 maybe, are the ones that she knows like in and out. Like they were the ones that she listened to the most. And so like, and I've had a lot of people tell me that Diver Down like is like one of their favorite ones to listen to because it, you know, had a bunch of hits. You know, all the Cowgirls are hits.
It did.
Yeah. For my favorite, I've got a big soft spot for Secrets. I think that's one of David Lee Roth's like all-time great vocal performances, where it's light and airy and melodic, but he's still radiating fun and attitude. And I think that's hard to pull off. And Eddie's rhythm playing on it is like really restrained and tasteful, but still interesting. And I like it that David Lee Roth got the lyrics for it from Hallmark greeting cards.
I've heard of people doing some weird stuff like that. Fucking on one of my favorite Faith No More albums, one of the songs was from Mike Patton deciding to like not sleep for like 2 days and read a lot of fortune cookie fortunes.
Okay,
like that's clever.
That would do it. Uh-huh. Yeah. And Eddie played Secrets on a Gibson double neck 12 string, which I can't imagine happened very much. So
that doesn't seem like a very Eddie thing to do.
No, it doesn't. So all of that stuff makes me feel like that song has like some weird, unique mojo to it, I guess.
That's fair.
Yeah. My least favorite would probably be Dancing in the Streets. It's good, but having it right after Oh Pretty Woman really drives in the covers fest aspect of it.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh.
It is a weird sequencing thing. I can see that.
Yeah, yeah. But again, I love it. I hear it on the radio and I go, sure. You know, it kicks ass. And you know,
when you consider like an hour block of classic rock, and if that's like the worst thing you hear, like, I don't know, you know, whatever, it's cool.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple things to play on this one. I wanted to play the Secrets guitar solo, actually.
Nice.
It's like kind of melodic and flashy, but kind of weird and interesting. So I don't know. I dig it.
Don't know either. Wait like the wind. Watch where she blows.
Playing into like the chords there a little bit in an interesting way, you know.
Hell mm-hmm. yeah, man, that's a great solo. Mm-hmm.
And then I had the interlude in Little Guitars because I feel this is like Van Halen experimenting, and I'm definitely interested in that, you know, aspect of when they allow themselves to do it.
There are, you know, few moments where they kind of like, let's stretch out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So this is one of my things. That's not typical Eddie Van Halen.
No, it's hanging back.
Yeah.
Although that would maybe be my like second pick for favorite song.
Yeah. It's a pretty badass song, really. Yeah. There's so many cool moments in it. And then I also wanted to play the clarinet solo from Big Bad Bill because I figure like
it up for Jan.
My only logic is that when else are we ever gonna have a clarinet solo on our hair metal podcast?
This might be it.
So here is Papa Van Halen.
Gotta see that sweet woman every night. Big Bad Billy, Sweet William now. I'll play, boys.
Thank you. So then we actually skip a year here.
For the first time?
For the first time, we skip a year here. We don't have anything in 1980. I mean, things were happening in 1983.
Big tours.
Yeah, yeah. But we get up to 1984. Eddie's feeling very dissatisfied that he's giving so many concessions to David Lee Roth. And he'd been trying to do some stuff on keyboards and been discouraged by both David Lee Roth and Ted Templeman. And so he began building his own home studio, which is 5150, famously, with the engineer Don Landy. And to pass the time, he started playing around with synthesizers. They're like building a studio around him on his property, and he's like, "Well, what am I gonna do?" So he starts like dinking around with synthesizers and stuff. And he referred to that period as how he was operating without interference from Dave and Ted. And he wanted to achieve a compromise of everything, which is kind of a noble goal, but wow.
That's fair.
Yeah. And this album took the longest to record to date.
More than 2 weeks.
Yeah, this took 3 months to record. And kind of a fun trivia about 1984. We went and saw that Hypnosis movie.
Yeah.
The documentary in Des Moines.
That's and the, right. And the cover couple, artist for, yeah, the couple for artists, 84 was there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a couple that did the cover art to 1984, and they live in Des Moines. And so we got to, and they did a little talk.
Oh, at, that was
at,
neat.
At this documentary, which you should totally check out. It's the Hypnosis documentary. I know it's on like, I think it's on Netflix. It's on Apple TV or Apple Plus.
And yeah, stuff. Admittedly, I haven't even looked since we went and saw it.
And the same couple did the cover to Prince's Purple Rain. So that's, you know, small tie into that. Apparently, during the writing of I'll Wait, Eddie got stuck. And so Ted Templeman sent it to Michael McDonald from the Doobie Brothers, because that's his friend. Because
yeah, I remember hearing about him having
And so he
having some credit.
Yeah, he helped David Lee Roth out with the lyrics and the melody, because David Lee Roth, he didn't really dig the song. He wasn't into the synthesizer thing and stuff. And so they got him some help. And Eddie also says he tried to get Jump going for 2 years earlier, but like Dave wasn't into it. And then but kind of a cool redemption point in his autobiography. Dave says it's true that he wasn't into it, but he now enjoys the song and he gets it. He admits that he was wrong about it. So,
hey, you know, so it goes.
Yeah. 1984 peaked at number 2, and that was only because Thriller had the top spot. And of course, Eddie played on.
So Eddie still got to be at the top, and kinda, you know.
He kinda has the top 2 spots in at the same time. Yeah. And also the way he got that gig is Michael Jackson originally asked Pete Townsend to play the guitar solo, and Pete Townsend was unavailable, and so they said, well, who would you recommend? He goes, I'd get Eddie Van Halen.
So much better pick. No diss, Pete, but
yeah,
dude, come on.
Yeah, yeah. 1984 sold over 10 million copies. I mean, it was huge.
It's huge. Yeah. We all know it. Everybody knows. Like, it is funny that Thriller is what keeps it from the top spot, because it's one of those albums that feels. It's funny because it had 4 singles. It had 4 singles, but it feels like there was more than that. It just the way it got saturated on radio makes it feel like.
It does.
You know, it was just, all of it was just there.
Yeah, even the songs that weren't hits got played on, like, you know, AOR stations and stuff. Absolutely. Like that. I mean, the entire thing is just like a melody fest and, like, you know, and yeah, they really, you know, they threw down. It really is the happy, you know, combination of all of the different aspects of Van Halen.
Because, you know, like, I remember that Drop Dead Legs wasn't like a single or anything like that.
Yeah.
But our local classic rock station would play that song.
Yeah, yeah. All the time. Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing the video for Panama when it debuted on MTV, and it was definitely in heavy rotation at that point. And I don't, you know, and I don't think we need to play it or anything. It's been heard a lot, but I think I think that Panama is one of the great all-time great guitar performances from top to bottom. Just like
the way Eddie plays it,
the rhythm parts, the way the song flows into the, like, the lead parts and stuff like that. It is a performance.
And once again, this album that was giant and felt like it was everywhere, 33 and a half minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they just,
yeah,
you know, they come in and kick ass and leave.
And the song Panama, just to go back for a second, is named after David Lee Roth's car. He said in an interview that a reviewer said all that Van Halen wrote about was women partying in fast cars, and he realized, I haven't written about a car.
That's awesome.
Which makes me love him even more. You know, he's like, I should probably do that. Yeah.
Talk about telling a writer to eat shit.
And apparently during the United States invasion of Panama, U.S. soldiers played this song repeatedly as a form of psychological warfare in an attempt to force General Manuel Noriega out of hiding. Which I just loved the idea of soldiers blasting Panama.
That just makes me think of The Office and Kevin going, they should do that thing where they play the really good music to get them.
What's your favorite song in 1984?
Hot for Teacher.
Hot for Teacher? Okay.
No hesitation.
Okay.
That song is just a
performance. Yeah.
The entire performance is just excellence.
It is. It is. Yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody knows that drum intro, which is just like, you know, you sit down and listen to him play it, and you're like, oh, my God, what? And once again, going back to that thing we said about Van Halen songs being shuffles.
Total shuffle fest.
And just his whole guitar performance, that whole, once again, mm-hmm. you know, everything mm-hmm. about that, his rhythm stuff on there, his leads, it's just.
Yeah, the intro. I mean, man, shit.
Yeah, for being the big keyboard record, it's funny that Hot for Teacher's on here because it is such a guitar song and such utter like guitar perfection.
It's the tour de force of guitar
even
playing.
More so than like anything on one or two, I think. Hot for Teacher is like his here's how you play the fucking guitar, kids.
Yeah. Well, and Alex saying this is how you play.
Oh, absolutely. His drums. That drum performance is no bullshit. It is so on.
Yeah. Yeah, and I picked, I don't know, for some reason this time when I was listening to it, I mean, this is one that I definitely have digested a lot and listened to a lot. I'll Wait, I picked out, I've heard it a million times, and it's still...
You picked the Michael McDonald song.
I did, and it's
No,
still,
I like that song too, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, the arrangement on it is just masterful with all those layered synths.
It
if
is,
if you peel
you know,
back those synths and listen to them a little bit, there's a lot going on there. And it also has a super melodic Eddie Ripper guitar solo on it.
It does actually, you know, I guess in a way it does kind of suggest some of the things that are coming, but a lot of things on this album did. So,
I don't know,
that's not the only one, but
yeah,
this song is as close as they got to the Van Hagar sound while being cool Eddie mm-hmm. or cool mm-hmm. Dave mm-hmm. music. It is a great tune. I'm totally with you. Yeah. This is another one. I don't think there's a bad spot on the record. But
yeah, what's your least favorite?
I mean, maybe the instrumental that opens the record. That's about the best
the
I can come up with. Because I just think once again, the thing is they make these really lean albums when they're so you don't
right. It's hard to throw anybody out.
It's hard to pick a bad track because they're all so over and done. So quick, that's what's always been tough for me picking a least favorite song on one of the Dave albums.
And I'm with you. I you know the truth is I love this album from top to bottom and it's a classic. But you know if I'm trying to do the push come to shove thing and like pick a bad one, the one I picked was Girl Gone Bad. I mean, I want to say Jump because it's overplayed, but every time
but that song's awesome.
Every time I hear the solo on Jump, I'm like, oh yeah, this song's awesome.
And you know, I do have maybe a dark horse running for favorite song being Top Jimmy, just because that intro.
Top Jimmy's really cool.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's the one. Honestly, I probably had stuck in my head for days after listening to this album.
I can see how it would do that.
That is, you know, let's play a. Let's play some stuff off of this.
Hell
one.
Yes.
I wanted to play the solo section from Drop Dead Legs, mostly because it's like a groove grind solo section, and mostly for the rhythm section more than anything. We'll be right back. not sure if that's a shuffle or not. It's got a grind to it.
Yeah, it's not quite a shuffle.
Like one of the longer Eddie Van Halen guitar solos, actually.
It is. It gets to go for a while.
Yeah. He gets out there a little bit over that cool grind.
And if any of y'all know about any cool like 1984 era like Van Halen bootlegs, let me know, because I know there's like a bunch of songs that were recorded during this process that have never been released. Fun fact: there was a song that they recorded for this album called Ripley. That wasn't released, and it is verified that that song later became the song Blood and Fire that's on Different Kind of Truth, the last album they ever made. So we know it exists. It's out there later, but there's a whole bunch of other songs that they can't verify if they ever got reworked, and so there's at least four of them. So if anybody knows about any cool bootlegs, hey, DM us, all right?
Yeah, turn us on to that, yeah, for sure.
Help a person out.
And I just, you know, this is a little bit of candy, but I wanted to play the Hot for Teacher intro. Just
hell yes,
we
you do.
About it because
sit down,
I mean,
Waldo.
This is, you know, if there's anybody that's like, I don't know about Van Halen, this is the thing you do. You play for them to demonstrate the band's prowess.
Whatever.
You know? Yeah, it's been heard a lot, but still, damn.
Ma, you know I'm not like other guys. I'm nervous and my socks are too loose.
That rhythm part is like super cool.
It's so good.
Yeah, and then it goes into. I've spent some time trying to learn how to play that one too. And that one's putting all that together, like to play it as one song would be like just a nightmare.
What I say about it is, I'm glad I'm a bass player.
Right. Yeah. And then the only other thing I want to play off of this is the Girl Gone Bad solo. I have another soft spot for that, and I don't feel like that one gets.
It was your least favorite song.
I want to play the solo. Though. You know, there's actually going to be a trend of that. There's going to be a lot of the times where I pick like the best, which is I have another one of my posits, my themes, is that Eddie Van Halen, you'll have like a shitty song. You don't really like the song. And then all of a sudden, Eddie's solo comes in and the song seems saved for a minute.
They call that the Richie Sambora effect.
Right.
Sorry, Bon Jovi fans.
Yeah, but anyway, here's Girls Gone Bad. I think it's a key shift, too.
That's nice.
We'll be right back.
That's a great way to get back into the, yeah.
It is. Yeah. So this album is enormous, all over the place. But David Lee Roth leaves to start his solo career.
And he makes the seventh Van Halen album called Eat 'Em and Smile, right, which we talked about on an earlier episode.
Yeah, he takes Ted Templeman with him, too.
He does take Ted Templeman. Remember that, everybody. He took Ted.
As kind of a big fuck you.
He didn't take Don Landy.
Yeah. And then,
sorry, Don.
And so Van Halen's like struggling to find a singer. But then Eddie, because he's a huge rock star at this point, he has a Lamborghini. And he has a mechanic working on his Lamborghini. And he's talking to his mechanic, and the mechanic says, I know
another guy with a Lamborghini.
Yeah, I know who you should get.
Oh my
Hello,
God.
Baby.
Yeah. That's right, people.
Yep. And so in comes Sammy Hagar. And at this point, like...
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a lot of ups and downs with it. There's a lot of people that love the Sammy period, and there's a lot of people who hate the Sammy period. And, you know...
With that, we get to the longest fucking 43 minutes I've ever fucking heard in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, let's... Yeah, some context a little bit here, though. Yeah, context. Okay. So Eddie meets with Sammy, and they hit it off immediately and begin writing music. And here we see a departure.
It's because of tequila.
Yeah. The songs they start writing are love songs and ballads. And people refer to this band as Van Hagar for both good and bad reasons.
Thanks, Valerie Burton Ernie. Yeah.
Valerie Burton Ernie. Yeah. That name took off so well that the label asked them to change the name to Van Hagar. But Eddie and Alex refused, and I think that was probably a good move.
I mean, that would have been weird.
Yeah. Engineer Don Landy takes over as their producer, along with Mick Jones from Foreigner.
Yeah, I was going to say, not the cool one from The Clash, but the one from fucking Foreigner.
Yeah, Mick Jones from Foreigner comes in, so that's weird. And you know, so like, you know, taking a listen to this stuff, we're on the album 5150, it's 1986. Eddie's guitar, it's not mixed as live as it was on previous albums. And this is the first album to not have any instrumental tracks on it, which is a departure too.
And that's the funny thing to me, is it's one of the first albums where it sounds like they start following a sound rather than, you know, like...
Yeah. It is
having their own sound. I don't know.
And this is where I would argue that they sort of said, "Oh, people are comparing us to hair metal. Maybe we should be hair metal." You know,
this is probably yes.
That's my thesis.
This is closer to hair metal than anything we've talked about before it.
Yeah. The album went to number one almost immediately, and it sold over 2 million copies. They went on a huge tour. Sammy didn't.
It was very popular.
It was very popular. Very popular. Yeah. Sammy didn't want to do most of the catalog. He didn't want to be compared to David Lee Roth.
Why is that?
So they ended up doing nearly all of this album, along with
singer replacement is not easy, people. We'll get to that in later episodes of other bands that we talk about.
Yeah, that's true. So they filled it in with other Sammy Hagar hits, because he did have some hits and some covers.
It's funny that because, you know, I don't want to do the Dave songs they played. There's only one way to rock, and it's like, well, no, we know there isn't now.
there's perhaps multiple ways.
There's at least two ways to rock, but that just doesn't sound quite as awesome. Yeah.
And another perk is that you can say what you want to about Sammy. He's a pretty solid guitar player.
Never been the argument.
Which means that Eddie can play keys more easily, which is clearly what he wanted to do.
Because they were going to do Emerson, Lake, and Palmer's Pictures at an exhibition, but then they thought better of it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm making this up.
Yeah, yeah. Or am I? Yeah. And I do want to say that, like many, I have to say I'm not as big of a fan of the Sammy Hagar albums. But this one does have a special spot for me because it's the only time I ever got to see Van Halen live was on the tour for 5150.
Ladies and gentlemen, I never saw Van Halen. I really wish I would have, but there's only very select windows that I wish I would have.
Yeah, I saw them in Des Moines at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium, and it blew my mind. I mean, they, you know, as a live band, they were ferocious. The ballads translated better live, maybe.
It's probably also one of those things where you're seeing a band that's like, okay, somebody, they weren't getting along internally, and now a new guy's along, so everybody's on their best behavior and having a good time. So you're seeing them when they're like genuinely enjoying themselves because the new thing's happening. So I get that. I get how that would translate to a very energetic live performance. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it falls apart a little bit for me, but like at this point, like in my life anyway, in terms of like a memory, that concert was a big deal for me, and they had this big festival like called the Iowa Jam that was like
I remember Iowa Jam. Yeah, I remember hearing about it.
It was at the State Fairgrounds. It was the same day as the Van Halen show, and like and all of a sudden you heard Sammy Hagar saying like, holy shit, we got the Iowa Jam back here. Like Ted Nugent was backstage, and I don't remember who all else. There was everybody that had played from the Iowa Jam showed up backstage, and they were all worshiping Van Halen, you know, basically, and showing up to like be there for him and stuff like that. And so there was a lot of like electricity in the room of like it felt like they were doing something at the time. You know, I will admit, like later on, it falls apart for me like quite a bit, but like I do remember having that feeling, and I'm going to hold on to it. what's your favorite song off of 5150?
I'm going to admit my favorite song on 5150 is Best of Both Worlds. And the reason for that is because in the movie Clerks, when Randall goes to the other video store to rent a video and he comes back and Dante's like, what'd you get? Best of Both Worlds. Yeah, man. And it's just because it makes me think of a joke from Clerks.
Okay.
So that's okay. Yeah. And I remember kind of enjoying, there was a video for that song when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And the thing is now, I don't remember if it was a promotional video for that, that double CD live album they put out in what, 93 or something like that. I don't know if it was from
right here,
that,
right now,
or if it was a promotional video for, because I think they did a VHS tape called like Live Without a Net or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
That was from the 5150 tour. And it might have been clipped from that VHS and shown as a promotional video on MTV. So, and 7-year-old me was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know. I also thought Thundercats were cool when I was 7. So, like, you know, like, whatever. So take that, you know, as what you want.
Yeah. But I remember growing up and thinking, like, will there ever be a television show better than Lost in Space?
You could have picked a worse show, but
my favorite's probably Get Up on this. The lyrics ruin it because it's like all Sammy trying to be motivational speaker and stuff like that.
Oh, I thought it was an ad for a Cialis.
why is it not that totally should be get up and make it work. That is totally some sort of like, you know, hymns, you know. But I did have a note that I have fond memories of Best of Both Worlds, mostly because when they performed it live, they did do that thing where they all like, you know, like everybody who wasn't Alex got together and like, you know,
they had a move thing. And you know, honestly, kind of like,
and that song has the swagger
Redfish thing. There is kind of that old swagger.
It's
there
a good
in that
chorus.
Tune. You know? Yeah.
What's your least favorite?
Oh my God, fucking Dreams. Fuck you, you stupid fucking song. Fuck you. I'm sorry to... Okay, all the Sammy Davis... All the Sammy Hagar fans. It's like, it's cool if you like this.
The Cabo's kicking in.
The Cabo is kicking in. But no, I'm sorry. Fuck that song. Oh my God, it's a headache.
You know, I going into this, I was trying to like keep my critical mind and everything like that. And so like, you know, in my note, like Dreams is like, you know, it's my least favorite song on the album, but it's a well-constructed song. It's just really right. not my thing.
Like as far as understanding the pop medium and putting songs together. Yeah, yeah. I get it. Like,
I like
okay.
the little tapping riffs that Eddie does in spots. Like it's like he's trying to save the song a little bit and throw in some cool stuff. And also, Love Walks In can like that's not really
Blech.
I feel like this is exactly the sort of thing that Dave was trying to prevent Eddie from doing, honestly.
And the thing is
and Inside is like a very self-absorbed
I mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's
I didn't bring my notes with me for this because I just decided I didn't want to, but but that song, I was just like, oh, shut up.
Yeah,
just
I think if I'm framing things properly, you were like, you know, completely fuck Hagar, like Van Halen. I'm trying to meet it halfway and like and having a hard time too. So.
As when we were preparing notes on this album, I actually texted Brian and said, I've never used the words fucking bullshit this many times in a review I've ever done, ever. Yeah.
That's okay. We're gonna get through this, and
that's just me.
Yeah.
If you like him, that's cool.
There's some highlights coming up.
But yeah, part of my thing is the production because like
production's different.
You know, on those first albums, you could hear a band rocking out. Kind of even like on the keyboard songs, you can still hear like a band rocking out. And this is where you start to get into that if you told me that each member of the band came in on a different day of the week to record all their parts, I would believe it.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's the downside probably of Eddie getting 5150 up and running is like he gets to be the
because
gatekeeper.
Now there's no schedule anymore. There is no. Yeah. We've got 2 weeks at Sound City, guys.
Right, right. There's not.
We can
that.
Just come over to my house whenever the fuck we want.
Yeah, yeah. Eddie's like, don't come over tomorrow.
Yeah, me and Valerie are watching Falcon Crest. You can't come over.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Don are working on synth parts.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so. I'm gonna play some highlights from the album as I see them. Anyway,
as I see them,
I'm trying to make sure we maintain fairness here. You know,
one of us didn't pick any highlights from this. I just want you to know that up front. But I understand how we gotta be we gotta be balanced, okay? Because some of y'all like this stuff, and that's cool.
Yeah, and I'm playing the long game here too because
we're going to hit a fallow patch, ladies and gentlemen.
There is a long story with Eddie Van Halen that is a thread that's going through here that I think is going to like emerge. But we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, but one moment at a time. So I want to play this solo from Get Up. Sammy hadn't had that scream in the middle of that. I bet that would have been awesome for you.
Hell yes.
Okay. And I also like the solo for Summer Nights and just a segment of that finger picking stuff because that finger picking stuff is cool. I mean, at this point we're like Eddie's Van Halen, right? You know,
this Summer Nights has nothing to do with Richard Marx's Summer Nights.
No.
Remember.
No. Grindy groove.
Oh,
It gets almost...
They start to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I like how like avant-garde that solo gets. Actually, it gets a little bit like sort of out there, but he never loses control, and then he comes back into that finger picking thing that's cool. But again, it all sort of like it's like, whoa, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, Sammy goes,
yeah.
So maybe Sammy's just bad at choosing his moments or something. I don't know, but
yes,
And I wanted to do kind of the same thing for Best of Both Worlds. I think this one also has a good solo and also a good finger picking riff. Hear like Eddie's fingers scraping on the strings there, which is kind of cool. That's like, you know, you can hear him playing.
A real moment.
Yeah. So now we go up to, so we were skipping another year because they went and toured a lot and things have
slowed
down.
And this is also
down.
When you get into the later 80s where most bands usually skip a year, where you record a record, you spend the next year touring, and then you do another record. Yeah. So that's just,
And production slows down a lot.
Yeah,
too.
It starts to become the norm by the time you get to the back half of the 80s, where it's a record every other year.
Yeah, and that's a topic I'd like to discuss at another time, how, like, why is it in the 60s and 70s you could record an album in 2 weeks and then...
They were a lot less expensive to record.
Yeah. Well, but...
We can thank Fleetwood Mac for that, for spending $1 million making Tusk.
Yeah, but...
And it oversized the recording world. And fucking digital.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've got a big butt. And my big butt is, like, nowadays, like, we can record albums, you know, like, at home. And like, you
yes,
know,
we can.
And stuff like that. And it still takes longer.
But, and the world of the major label doesn't want to abandon the model that made them shit tons of money in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've talked about this before, how a lot of these albums that we discuss have gone gold and platinum.
Yeah.
And are albums that people don't know about today.
Right. True.
You know,
it happens to me every day. I'm old.
Well, sure. And, you know, albums don't go gold and platinum as often anymore. Some singles may go gold and platinum, and a lot of it's like a digital sales or digital plays or something like that. But the days of being able to be a band of not even like Van Halen's popularity and sell a million copies, it's pretty much gone. That's
it
not a
gone.
Thing anymore.
Yeah.
Now, in a way, I don't think that's the worst thing, because it also means that we can all... you know, individualize our tastes the way we would like them to. And that's fine. But yeah,
true.
Having these big, like, world spanning albums, that's, it's not much of a thing anymore. Even
it's
like
not,
the biggest people you can think of, even something, you know, somebody like Taylor Swift or some shit like that, who has huge selling albums, still aren't selling the numbers that you saw in like the 70s through the early 90s.
Right, yeah.
It's just not a thing anymore.
There's too much other content.
There sure is. Because those of us who otherwise would have been buying other shit back in the 80s and 90s are now buying the other stuff now.
Right. And now that's available to us. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So that world crumbled, and probably for the better, people.
So OU812 comes out in 1988. It's another number one. It sold over 4 million copies.
Yes, it did.
Which is like, you know, so the hoi polloi, the public at large, is definitely like, they're into this Van Halen. You know, we can quibble about how we may not be into it, but it came out.
It was very popular.
It was very popular.
They basically produced it themselves.
They did.
Apparently, Don Landy's credit is very, you know, bless your heart, you were there with us.
Right, yeah. And the mix is very
you can tell.
It's
you
weird.
Can actually tell that, that they wanted to run it because even, you know, I'm pretty sure the edition I didn't listen to the remaster. I actually searched through my digital streaming and picked the not remastered older mix just to have some reference. It's still a digital remaster of some generation, but it's not the, was it 2023 that they did the big,
they did the collection.
The new collection. Yeah. Sure. And okay, this is why you need a producer sometimes. We can't all be Jimmy Page, okay? I don't know. Right. Somebody needed to be there to be like, is this really how you want this to sound?
Yeah, it has a little bit of the Lunatics running the asylum
Just a bit. Because it has some odd choices in mixing.
It does. Yeah, particularly with Eddie's guitar and like the way the bass is mixed and stuff like that. You know, and on the back they put the track listing in alphabetical order for some reason.
And you know that I remember getting a, somebody loaning me a cassette tape of that and being thrown off by that and being like, why is this worked like that?
Yeah, and when I remember buying this when it came out on CD, and I was still kind of like riding the high and getting into it, and I remember like you know, being a good fan and everything, I was like listening to the albums, I was like, man, I really like that song. What's it called? And then I would look at the back of the album and I'd be like, you know, oh, it's called this, and then like later on finding out it was named something else and being all like, what? That's confusing. Why would you be confusing people about
it? See, I don't think I actually had a copy of this until several years after it came out. Because I do remember, okay, when I was a kid, I actually really enjoyed most of the songs I heard on this. But I don't think I had an actual copy of this until probably 92.
Okay.
Friend made me a tape. And
yeah,
I think that's the first I heard. And somebody, they made a note on the cassette tape that said, on the album, they're not listed in this order.
which is such a weird. And this is the one where when I got it, I was rabid for it. I was excited for it. And then after like listening to it a bunch, I suddenly started going like, wait a minute. I don't know about this. Wait a minute. I think this might actually suck. And like, and so it was kind of a downer for me because it was like, I discovered Van Halen and like, you know, and I was trying to be on board with the new guy, but this was the one where, I mean, the CD is over 50 minutes long. This is the first time they've done that.
That's right. That's another reason I didn't listen to a later edition is because the one I listened to did not have the bonus track. Thank God.
It's filled with excess. It's like, you know, I don't know.
Even without the bonus track, you're at 46 and a half minutes, which isn't like the worst length ever, but
this is the one where like it's kind of a slog to I was surprised.
Yep.
Honestly, going back and listening to it, I was like hoping to recapture that nostalgic feeling of like, you know, when I was in college, and I thought, "Oh, I bet there's some good songs in here."
And did you know that Black and Blue was released as a single?
I did. I remember.
You knew that.
I did know that. Okay. Yeah. I remember seeing it and hearing it.
I'm just old enough when this album comes out to where I'm watching MTV constantly. Like, my parents gave me a little black and white TV that I learned how to hook into the cable box so I could watch MTV on my own, right? And I was the singles 2 through 4, I was bombarded with those videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, constantly. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it,
the last
single that feels so good, which is like a, you know, it's not the awesome song by Chuck Mangione. That was released closing in on a year after the album came out, which it's funny we say that because we talked about Hysteria where they had a single come out almost 2 years after the album came out. But these songs were everywhere. So to see that Black and Blue was released as a single, I was like, I've got nothing. Yeah. I don't remember that at all.
By the time they were released as singles, I decided I was over it. I was sort of like, I don't know, because I'd listened to it a bunch and it was like, they almost like over marketed it. Like that, I think that might have been what I was trying my hardest to be into, like the Hagar era.
It is funny,
band,
this
and it got
you know,
so marketed that it was like, I don't know.
sometimes inescapability kind of gets
it pointed out the schlockiness of it, which
it's why there's
it
certain
me.
Songs by that, because you know, being a little bit younger, it's why that band Live in the 90s, I just can't fucking stand listen to them, because there were a couple of their songs that were made omnipresent for just the right window of time where I'm like, I don't care, oh my god, stop this. And yeah.
All right, with all that being said, what's your favorite song off of OU812?
Well, I'm tempted to say Mine All Mine, because they kind of rock it up right there.
Yeah.
But I'm also tempted to say Sucker in a Three-Piece for the same reason on The Office when they ask Michael when he's happy with Jan. He's like, oh, sometimes I'm happy with her, like, you know, right near the end of having sex. It's like, so with that song, you're like, oh, I've made it to the end of the album. Cool. So when this song is done, I get to move on from this. So that might act. Okay. Sucker in a Three-Piece is my favorite song because it means we have made it to the end and I don't have to listen to this anymore.
Yeah. Mine is oddly Cabo Wabo.
That is a long song.
Yeah, not because of the lyrics or anything like that. I always liked that riff.
It's chunky riff. It's not a bad riff
and
or anything.
The Eddie and Sammy guitar interplay is actually at its best, I think, on this song of all of that.
And see, and that's one of the weird points I do kind of sort of have to give him, is I can imagine Eddie thinks it would probably be kind of liberated by the fact it's like, oh, you mean there's this guy who can play some rhythms?
Yeah.
So that like he can do his thing and then I can like kind of fly above that.
That's got to be appealing. Yeah.
I totally understand that for reasons we'll get into when we talk about a certain Motley Crue album that I really want to talk about. I get that. Yeah. I get it.
What's your least favorite?
Probably When It's Love.
Same.
It sounds like trying to eat an entire box of Zesta crackers.
Yeah, it's a little contrived and it's a little like I mean, it's cheesy. And again, they're very good at making cheese. They're, you know, they clearly.
We're in the minority. Aged cheddar as much as anybody else. Yeah.
Right.
But this is kind of like more like Kraft American singles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but you have to give it up for like, you know, the there's a tons of people like that. We're still hearing it on the radio today.
That's true. And McDonald's has restaurants everywhere, but that doesn't mean I think it's the best.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. 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 The people have spoken, but the people are wrong.
Now, okay. In a little way, I do. Yeah, a little bit. I will give it up to finish what you started a little bit, because
same.
It's a sound that they don't really ever touch on before or ever again.
Yeah, I was blown away by that song when it came out. Yeah,
so I do understand, like, kind of digging that tune, because it's a weird spot in their discography.
It is weird.
When you get down to it. Finish What You Started is kind of weird.
Yeah.
So sure. Okay. Some points there. That's fair.
There you go.
but yeah, for the most part, Oh god, it took like there are longer albums that I love, but these 46 minutes, I was just like, oh my god, when is this gonna stop?
Yeah. All right. Well, let me play some highlights.
Let's play some highlights.
I wanted to play the intro to Source of Infection. It's a little bit hot for Teacher, but it's a highlight of this album.
I did actually make that note.
Okay. Take one. It's not Take One. See that, how that's like kind of their hot for Teacher, because it kind of, you know.
And now here's a fun fact that we didn't include, and I just, this is one of the things I dug up as we were looking about Van Halen. So we're gonna we're going to cut back just a few years really quick. There was a movie called The Wildlife that came out in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie recorded some music for that. And some of it didn't get used in that movie.
Yeah.
And one of the little pieces that didn't get used in that movie was actually the thing that Marty McFly had on his cassette tape in Back to the Future. That's actually Eddie Van Halen.
And oh, it was, really?
Yeah. That's okay. Really Eddie Van Halen. It's a piece of music that he recorded for the movie The Wildlife that wasn't used.
I had the Wildlife soundtrack.
That they went and used in Back to the Future.
Huh. So, I didn't know that part, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a thing I dug up as I was cruising around on the internet, and that was a fun little piece of information. Yeah. And you know, as David Spade said, I like Van Halen, not Van Hagar. But no, I just wanted to mention that because we got through all this stuff and that little factoid slipped past me, and I really wanted to make sure we got that out there.
Yeah, yeah. Eddie did a lot of like side solo stuff that was pretty interesting, and you could
played
tell.
on a Black Sabbath record.
Oh, really?
Which we'll get to in the next episode.
Okay. Yeah. And then I also wanted to play this. So the song Feels So Good. I'm not a big fan of the song.
you would pick that one.
The solo to this song. This is, well, again, one of my theses is that that Eddie's solo elevates a song. And like, so if you cut out the rest of the song and play the solo in context here, or out of context, I guess. So this is a solo to Feels
Richie
So
Sambora
Good.
Richie Sambora effect. Take it.
Does he start with a whale sound on a solo?
I was literally just going to quote Lieutenant Uhura from Star Trek 4 and go, Captain, I'm receiving whale song.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good guitar solo, right?
That's really never been the crux of my argument about any of the later things.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm sticking with my thesis that that Eddie's solos elevate songs, which is a weird phenomenon. I don't know. I can't think of any other context that exists in. So.
No.
And so here's another one. This is the solo to Black and Blue, which is like sort of a similar thing. Robert Fripp level shit.
Yeah, it's getting a little out there.
I do like that riff. It's a cool riff, but like, yeah. Anyway. Anyway, that concludes part two.
Skyscraper was the better of the two 1988 albums involving anybody involved in this band.
Yeah. I would also agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. David Lee.
In fact, that album, I would give it, like, if you're talking about a 1 to 10 scale, including, you know, 10th digits, I would give it an 8.7.
Yeah.
Because I love you, Dave. And you know I'm here with you, Dave. I love you.
Yeah. Eat 'em and Smile and Skyscraper are a pretty unassailable, like, you know.
I like the next one, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not as familiar with that one. I need to get into that, but like
Jason fucking Becker, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and even Crazy from the Heat was a good, you know.
Oh hell yes, Crazy from the Heat was excellent.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Best dressed human being in the history of the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
I stand by that.
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing that's a good segue and a good setup for
because we're going to talk about passion and warfare next week. No, that's not actually true.
Yeah. In our next episode, we'll conclude with our Van Halen. Well, we're going to finish up the next Sammy albums, and then we have Gary Cherone on deck, and then we get back to the reunion with Dave. So
I'm so excited to talk about that one.
Yeah. 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 Same. So we're going to end on a positive note. Something to look forward to. Yeah, yeah. Sorry for the people that really like the Sammy albums. We're trying, no judgment
upon you. That's totally fine.
Right.
That's totally fine if you dig that stuff.
Yeah.
Not my bag.
Yeah.
I've also never made a multi-platinum record.
Right.
So,
right.
You
yeah.
Know,
yeah. We're clearly in the minority. So.
Yeah. So we'll just clear that up right away.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. We'll check you out next time.
Thanks, everybody.